We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. With me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And I am fired up to announce that rejoining us, an Oakland native and longtime sports columnist for the Bay Area News Group, a former NBA beat writer with over 10 years of experience, and, as San Jose Mercury once put it, the, quote, leading voice on the Golden State Warriors, Mr. Marcus Thompson II. What's going on, Marcus?
They put that for real?
I looked it up. In fact, I have it in quotes here on my notes. I thought it was a pretty impressive intro, honestly.
Yeah, I don't know about that one, man. I might have to make a couple calls on that.
You have big shoes to fill, man.
Right.
We've dragged you in today to talk about your new collaborative book, Super Team. And I got a lot of stuff I want to ask you. Before we get there, help settle an argument, man. In fact, two of them, and they're both Draymond related. So Scott and I do this thing where it's called Would You Rather, where you got two possible scenarios and you can pick from either. Last week, we said, all right, you have $100 and you have to bet on one of the following two things. Either that Draymond Green will never hit another guy in the testicles, or that Harrison Barnes will earn another max contract. What do you think, man? If you had to bet $100, put it on one of those two things, where does your money lie?
That would never happen? That Draymond would never?
Yep, exactly right. That he won't be... He won't be admonished for it. You know, like maybe it'll happen, but, you know, this assumes that the refs see it and call him out on it.
I guess I got to go with another max for Harrison.
Really? Do you actually think that's a possibility?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. First off, he's playing well, right? He's putting up numbers, which usually bodes well for contract situations. And as we go on, his max won't look that big because, yeah, you know, he's at, what, 22, 23, whatever. Steph's about to get like 30, 35, you know, so it won't look that big. So all it will take is in 4 years when Harrison Barnes is, what, 27 to enter in his prime, for somebody to say, yeah, you know, we got a bunch of money to spend. And we got to spend it. So, yeah, let's give him a max. I could definitely see that.
You are making me look bad. I now want to take away the whole leading voice of the Warriors thing. I said it wouldn't happen if he joined the WNBA. So one of us is going to be huge wrong there.
Ouch.
Funny line, though, right? I mean, did you kind of laugh when I said that?
No, I kind of said ouch because it stung. Like, man. No, I don't even know. Look, man, first off, you know how many players have gotten max contracts and not deserved them? It's not like everybody who gets one deserves it, right?
No,
so even if he doesn't deserve it, he still might actually get one. Jim McElvain once made more money than Sean Kemp. Like, that's what we're talking about here.
That's good knowledge. Also, just to show you how little I know, I also said that Harrison would never average above 10 points, and I think his average right now is like 22 or something. So my record isn't so great on this in particular subject, man.
Yeah, plus, you know, Draymond's going to kick somebody again.
Okay.
You know what's happening.
Factually correct, which leads me, all right, to the second one. Yeah, and this one's a little bit more serious. We have been, I am positive that Draymond's going to win Defensive Player of the Year. Scott doesn't agree with me. He thinks East Coast bias will prevent him from doing it. I am a little bit more concerned about this perception that he's a dirty player. We saw him get tattooed with a ridiculous technical last night. So of the two things, what's a bigger impediment to him being Defensive Player of the Year? East Coast bias or this perception that maybe his antics aren't as welcomed as they should be?
Can I say neither?
Oh, you can, but it'll make us both look bad.
I would have to go with East Coast bias if I had to pick one.
You're my man, Marcus.
The perception, I mean, Bruce Bowen was perceived that way.
That's
like,
true.
That's, yeah, that's a part of being a great defensive player, is being dirty. Dennis Rodman was considered dirty, you know. So that almost helps him that he's a little dirty, because you got to remember who's voting. Now, it might change, right? If media doesn't vote, which I think that's something the players are leaning towards,
right?
Then, you know, that might be a factor. They might not vote for him because they think he's dirty, but – you know, the people who are voting have never been, you know, kicked by Draymond. So it's not that personal. I think the bigger impediment is a guy named Kawhi Leonard, you know,
yeah,
the same guy who thwarted him the last two times. And I'm with you. I think he's going to get it, like, even with all of that. Because, number one, what is it, December? and we're talking about Defensive Player of the Year. When does that ever happen?
Right. That's exactly right.
He's already campaigned. Like, his campaign is strong. If you just ask some old random fan in Starbucks who's going to win Defensive Player of the Year, they actually might have an answer now. And they'll say, oh, it's Draymond, right? But and that's because he's kind of created it by going for it and talking about it. And now we have all these little moments he's creating, stopping Anthony Davis, you know, doing those things that make you say, that's Defensive Player of the Year behavior right there.
Right.
So he's created the narrative already. So I think that might even trump East Coast bias.
That's exactly what I've been saying, because he's given them those flash highlights, the things that will make it onto ESPN so that when the East Coast wakes up, they can still see evidence of his defensive prowess. I tell you what, let's shoot off to the collaborative effort, man, to the book Super Team. I read it. I really enjoyed it. Let me put it this way. I don't have media access to the team. So really, all the information I have, I steal from, you know, people like you. I read every article. I read everything online. It's my job to keep up on everything out there. And even though I do that, this book gave me a ton of insight that I did not know. So I appreciate it. Now, that said, you're the guy who gets paid to write about it. So I'll turn it over to you, man. Pitch this to us. Why, you know, what is this book about, and why should Warrior fans run out there and check it out?
You know, well, first, it's about, you know, one of the greatest NBA stories in the history of the game. It's like when you really, like, we're so in the forest, like, we can't really see this right now. But when we step back, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous what has happened to this franchise in the last 2 years. And this book captures that, you know, from the 24-0 to, you know, 73 wins to losing game 7 on its own court to the biggest rebound of all time. And 2 weeks later, getting Kevin Durant and ending all of the agony. Like, it's really ridiculous when you think about it. Everybody has to wait at least a year to have a redemption from their heartbreak, you know, of losing the finals. You got to at least wait till the next year. And the Warriors bounced back in 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks, July 4th, everybody's like, we winning, like, we back.
Yep.
And that's insane. So what this book does is kind of put the whole journey in one place, because I think some of the stuff got lost in the fact that they blew a 3-1 lead. 24-0 is ridiculous. 73-9 is ridiculous. Steph hitting 402 threes is ridiculous. And being the unanimous, there was a lot of incredible basketball moments that you forget about until you, like, go through it again. So the book allows you to kind of relive it, even the part that stings.
I love that. And I mean, even the part that stings almost highlights this experience for me, because one of the things I liked about that last offseason, Cleveland, you know, obviously walks away with the title. They get to celebrate their first and whatever it was, 50,000 years. And then their offseason didn't last longer than 10 days. You know, we immediately announced KD, and then the entire thing switches. But I don't want to lose the thread. Your recounting of where this team is now doesn't just start at the beginning of last year. Here's a passage from the introduction of your book. Quote, looking at the Warriors now, most see a championship contender, a super team loaded with all-stars and future Hall of Famers. With Curry, Clay, Draymond, and Kevin Durant, the Warriors are NBA gluttons, basketball's one-percenters. Such an existence never seemed possible for the Warriors. Such heights weren't visible from the depths where the Warriors dwelled. Those who followed the Warriors through any significant portion of their 40 years in the wilderness are still grappling with this new reality. That speaks to me, man. I used to spend $10 to go sit in the rafters and watch this team lose by 50. So the idea that there's now a book out there called Super Team about this franchise blows my mind, which leads me to my first question on this. Who do you credit for this turnaround? Not you know, building the actual team we see in front of us, but taking these guys from the shadow of Cohan to the heights of Lakeup. Like, what led to this success?
Well, for starters, I mean, the answer is really easy. Like, it's Steph Curry, because all of this happens on the back of a great player. And if you go to any quote-unquote super team, it's always one player who's so great that he kind of leads the way. And whether it's Michael Jordan, Tim Duncan, Kobe, Magic, any team that you think of throughout the history of the NBA, that you would consider in that league, it's always like centered around one guy. Even the Detroit Pistons. Remember the Pistons who like won a title in 04 and their whole claim to fame was not having an all-star? Nobody puts them in a category with the great teams because they don't have that one guy who kind of carried it.
As a Detroit Pistons fan, somebody who was born in Detroit, I put them up there as a great team.
No, you don't.
No, of course he doesn't.
You do that out of bias.
No, he doesn't. He knows that's not true.
Deep in your heart, you know it's not true.
That is
you know they shouldn't have won against the Lakers.
They killed the Lakers.
Okay, we are not talking about Detroit. Marcus, just move on. Don't allow this fool to make this a Detroit Pistons conversation.
So, like, it doesn't work until you get that guy. And the Warriors got that guy. So all of this stuff is irrelevant if they don't get Steph Curry or if Steph Curry doesn't become the central dominant figure that allows you to be that guy. So Lakers buying a team, of course, that's huge. And him investing into the team, that's a major part of this. It doesn't happen without a legit owner. Bob Myers piecing his team together, the support, Draymond Green becoming – and all NBA play, like all of that stuff matters, but it starts with the fact that Steph Curry became great. And without that, you don't have it because you got to compete with LeBron,
right?
You know, Tim Duncan at the time, you know, Kobe, like every team that's going to win a championship, they got that one guy. And the Warriors finally got their one guy. And after years of trying to get him or getting him and he ended up a crackhead or getting him and he ended up leaving or getting him and he turns out he's not that good after all. You know, it was always that. They finally got their one guy who was good enough to take on the best in the league. So for me, the easy answer is Steph.
That makes sense. Well, and also, I mean, Steph also teased us up front, right? I mean, with the ankle problems and all that stuff, we didn't know immediately that he was going to be the centerpiece. The other thing I love about that answer, and I completely agree with you, but I remember when the whole light years ahead thing came out with Lakeup, and I actually really enjoyed it. It was good to have someone who was like bravado filled and overly confident. But what that didn't say was that they already had Steph before Lakeup signed on. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if it's fair to say that they were light years ahead. Is there any portion in your experience that you miss about the old days, you know, when they were awful? I mean, like, is there anything that you look back fondly on now, or do you much prefer where we are now?
So I definitely miss empty locker rooms, right? I definitely miss, you know, there was a time it was just, you know, me and Rusty Simmons, right? Or me and Janie Hu, right? Like, you're on the road and nobody cares, so you could walk up to any player you wanted to and have any conversation. We used to have some crazy, random conversations about meaningless stuff. And now you can't really do that because no matter who you talk to, there's like a swarm of people waiting to get in your conversation. So I definitely look back on those days fondly when I had full reign of the locker room. Me, literally, Rusty and I, we're on the road. We would literally together decide, let's not go to practice today. Like, we could do that. Like, we're both going to give ourselves a day off and we're going to agree. And we could do that. We could just make the decision between us and say, look, we're both done. We're both exhausted. And they're not going to say anything at practice. It's March and the season's over. Right. Right. The only reason we would go is because the other would go and to make sure we're not missing something. But if we both said, hey, let's not go, that was it.
Yeah,
well, like,
yeah.
Warriors coverage, we're done.
I mean,
that
you feel like
never
you
happen now.
You already had enough quotes from Vontigo Cummings,
yeah,
or something,
you
didn't need like a 50th one.
I'd stand in front of the coach for the 900th time so he could say, explain why they suck. Like, we already know
awful.
Why.
I should use this, and I should have said it right up front. This is more for the audience because, Marcus, you already know it, but Rusty, unfortunately, is still going through some health difficulties. We're expecting him back remarkably soon. But until then, we are going to carry on, man. All right, let me shoot another portion of your book by you. You offered this quote from two-time MVP Steve Nash. Quote, yeah, this team potentially could be better than any team in NBA history. But again, that's just potential. They have to find a way to play together. If you can find that, sure, they can be the best offensive team ever. Let me start here. Do you agree with that? Does this team have the potential to be the best offensive team ever?
Without question. Like, they might already be.
That was going to be my next question. Are they?
Yeah.
You know, so take me through that. Where do we stand on that?
They have to get the accomplishments first, right? They actually have to do it. They got to go out and have the highest scoring average, highest efficiency ratings. They got to, like, finish the course. So they have to do it. But when you just look at the talent, if you just think who's the third best player on every great offensive team, and you start going down the line, you know, you had Magic, Kareem, and who's the third best player? And if he ain't better than Clay,
yep.
Right, now you go fourth best player, you know. And we talking about from offense perspective. You start getting down to four, now it's like, all right, you got, like, role players. You got bona fide dudes who need to be spoon-fed.
Yep.
And the Warriors have four, like, all NBA players. Not to mention their top two, like, if their second best player, no matter who you say it is probably going to be the better than the second best player on any other team you probably can name, any other offensive juggernaut. Like, who is it? If it's Magic, like, who's the second best player? Kareem,
right.
Who wasn't even in his prime
right.
at the time.
Right.
Right.
Is with Jordan and Scotty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's and like, they can get whoever you short. Pick, it's like, all right, Durant's better than Kevin McHale. Right. I'm going to just say that.
Yeah.
Durant's better. Like, whoever you pick, no matter how you cut it, they just have so much to work with. Again, they got to go out and do it. They have to go. They have to end with the numbers. They have to end with the backup, because 10 years from now, we're going to be on Warriors Huddle comparing it. And I need to be able to say, well, the Warriors had averaged 119 a game, you know, on 50% shooting.
You need objective measures. Yeah.
But the talent is unquestionably there. They should be the best offensive team, especially not like maybe not this year, but they do need time to gel the benefit that the other teams had. So in 2 years, when this thing is a well-oiled machine, it's going to be ridiculous.
Well, to be fair, are you considering the 2002 Pistons, Marcus? Because they were, I mean, just an offensive juggernaut.
You know what I'm saying?
2004, you know, whatever.
I'm with you. I'm with you, man. Like, they were just unguardable.
Just unstoppable. 90, just unstoppable.
99 points a game.
Yeah, well, they got lucky if they got to 99.
Yeah,
I don't
know. Well, guess what? Defense wins championships.
So, you're right. You're absolutely right about that. No question.
So you beat me to the punch by saying, look, we probably need, one, objective measures, but two, a little bit of time to see, you know, these guys gel and then what it becomes. What do they need to add? You know, so what's going to happen between now and 2 years from now that will make these guys the offensive juggernaut we think they should be?
Well, the primary thing is they really have to figure out how to handle clutch, like, close games, half-court possessions. They still kind of struggle. They still kind of lean on three-point shooting and bad habits, which we saw in Game 7 with all the marbles. They couldn't score for 4 minutes. Yeah. And they still have some of those tendencies to live by the three and kind of go for the dagger. So they've got to get that down. When do you go ISO KD, right? When does Steph take over, like? It's figuring out that stuff. Which do you run 1-4 pick and roll with Draymond or 1-3 with KD and Clay in the corner? Like, they need their bread and butter that always works no matter who they're going against. It's that type of stuff they have to figure out. And I don't think they're there yet. I think they still need to figure it out, because in tight games, their offense just is – first off, it shouldn't be tight if they were –
yeah, right.
If they were in sync. Yeah, yep. If they were in sync, it should be tight. But it's going to be tight in the playoffs. And where do they go? We kind of don't know those answers yet. So they got to figure that out. And then they got to get a center. You know, they got to get somebody who can run the floor, who can finish, who can possibly, on certain matchups, you know, post up. And I don't think they have that. So I'll be watching closely to see where Nerlens Noel ends up.
You think they'll make a move? Is this a prediction or?
Nah, it's just you got to see how it works out. They're not going to add anybody now
right.
that's going to stop them from signing KD. So whoever they add, his contract needs to be off the book at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So
you saying that's not JaVale McGee or?
Nah, you know what? You could see how much he benefits though, because
yeah.
he can finish.
Yep.
But he's just a guy, like, you can't post him up. You know, you can't give him the ball and say, hey, JaVale, make a decision, because he's not that comfortable. And you start playing against, you know, Popovich and, you know, these playoff coaches. They're going to exploit JaVale.
No, of course. I'm joking.
So,
no, I mean, JaVale has found his niche in exactly what he's doing. You know, right?
Absolutely.
10 to 15
But you can
minutes.
See, like, how much, like, when you put JaVale in over Zaza, like, something happens.
Yep.
They, like things open up, and that's for me shows they need a big who they can, you know, who's a little bit better than JaVale, but kind of brings what JaVale brings.
I can see where you're coming from. Also, the thing I like about JaVale, just as kind of a random aside, I don't remember a fan base being that excited for kind of a bit player since Manute Bol. I mean, like every time they get in, everyone's kind of fired up about the possibility where really he's a bit player. You know what I mean?
You're forgetting one, though. You're forgetting a bit player who they got really excited about. Let's see if you can guess this one.
Brian Cardinal.
That was
the right answer. But that's the right answer, Marcus. I knocked that out of the park. No, Give me something there.
Watch when I tell you who it is. You're right.
Go ahead. Shoot.
Jeremy Lin.
Oh, come on. That doesn't count. He wasn't Jeremy Lin when he was here.
Exactly my point. You remember he would come off the bench at the end of the game and they would give him a standing ovation?
I do. Okay.
And he was
embarrassed. But I mean, can we go back and say, at least, I mean, you can lie to me, but tell me, wow, Brian Cardinal really impressed me. You showed some knowledge there. Do you want to say anything like that or no?
Brian Cardinal really impressed me. You showed some knowledge.
Hey, thanks, Mark. I can't tell you how much that means to me, man. going back to this is right from the book and it picks up what we were talking about. All right. So, quote, the Cavaliers came up with a plan to defend the Warriors. Though aided by circumstances, press up and take away the open threes, grab and hold until the whistle blows, and force the supporting cast to beat them. It worked. Curry and Thompson settled for contested three-pointers against the pressure defense. Harris and Barnes went ice cold. The bench couldn't score. But now the Warriors have Durant. In addition to giving the Warriors one more player who can't be left open, Durant gives the Warriors what they didn't have. Someone who can counter physicality by getting to the free throw line. And I loved that passage. You've already explained why they needed that, so let me push in a different direction. Do you think the Warriors now have what they need to beat the Cavs in the finals, assuming we get that finals rematch?
For the record, I think they have what they need to beat the Cavs last year.
Yeah, all right.
It's just Steph was hurt. I don't understand why this, like, it's cool. It, you know, I understand, like, outside of the Bay, I'm a homer, whatever. And first off, two things people really miss about this whole experience. Number one, they miss that they're like any other team who did what the Warriors did would be celebrated as, you know, the Rudy story.
Sure.
Right? Like people miss the fact, like people used to laugh at the Warriors and now they're the champions. That's why it's like a big deal. So people get mad at the Warriors fans like, do they suffer for 40 years? Nobody's like begrudging Cubs fans right now, right?
It's exactly
like,
right.
That's how. So it's like they're mad at people being happy for finally being relevant. That's right. One. The other thing they miss is Steph was hurt. Yep. Like, why is this a big deal? Like, it's cool. Like, Cleveland won that. They should absolutely celebrate. They played well. But I still think, you know, circumstance help, and that's part of the long haul. Like you gotta be. It's about last man standing as much as it is about talent. It's about surviving the 82 game grind and still being able to come through with it. Like that's part of being a champion. And yes, it is a benefit to the East that the Cavaliers got to blow through the weak East, and the Warriors had to grind it out. Like that's part of it. That's all part of it. So it's not an excuse. That's the way it is. But if you just analyze the rosters, they needed all of that to barely win.
Yep.
So I think they had enough last year. Not to mention the Warriors had a hand in their own demise. I don't know why Steve Kerr put Festus Ezeli and Anderson Bergeron in the game.
I don't feel like crying, Marcus. Let's not talk about that, man. I'm not going to take that well.
That's Cleveland didn't do that. That's the Warriors did that. Yep. So all these factors, so I think they were better than the Cavs last year, but the Cavs were better in that series, at least the last four games of it. Now you add Durant, I don't even think it's close. You know, I don't.
This is becoming my favorite interview of all time.
I could be wrong. I've been wrong before.
No,
LeBron is phenomenal.
So I'm sure I've been wrong like 50 times during this podcast, but I couldn't agree with you more. So every time people keep talking about the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead, I won't reiterate what you just said. I don't know if we can say they blew it because their best player was hurt, but two, that's only half the story. The Warriors blew a 3-1 lead and then added a top 10 player of all time in the offseason. So good luck with that.
Just for the record, they did blow a 3-1 lead. They choked.
I thought I was agreeing with you there, man.
They choked. I just want to make that clear that I'm not saying they're making it. I'm not making an excuse for them. They choked. They should have won. even with Steph being hurt. They should have won, which means they choked. So let's put that out there. And Kyrie did take his game up a notch. So that's another piece to the puzzle. Kyrie is something to be dealt with. He found, like, you know, he opened the matrix. He figured something out in the finals to take his game to another level. So that's something to be reckoned with. And maybe Kevin Love has done the same now.
Yeah, it looks like
he looks different, right? So maybe that's something to be dealt with and figured out. But, man, I don't care who you are. If you just line up these rosters on paper, you taking the team with Steph and KD. Like, that's just what you're doing.
That's just factually correct.
Well, I'm looking forward to a little preview on Christmas Day of this matchup.
And that's, I was just about to push us there. So how big of a deal is this game to you, Marcus? Are you? Is it a barometer? Is it just a regular season game? What is this?
It means absolutely nothing. That's
really?
What it means. It
Why?
Means absolutely nothing. Because last year they went to Cleveland and won by 38.
Yeah.
And then blew a 3-1 lead. So what if they win by 40, 50, 100, Cleveland can say, well, they blew us out last year and we still won a championship, so it doesn't mean nothing.
What about the other side to that? Yeah, they lose.
If they lose, the Warriors can say, hey, we know we got work to do. Come see us in May.
Right.
Right? Come see us in June. Like, that's their whole approach. They know. They're even playing like they know this doesn't really matter. Like, we want to get the number one seed and everything, but remember last year how, like, when they come up against a big game like this, the Clippers or the Spurs or it was like a big deal, and they played like, we got a message to send y'all,
yep.
right?
Yep.
They blew teams out. It was like, all right, we got to show you. They don't do that this year. They're like, man, whatever. We trying to get our life together.
Right. And they've been there,
done that. Come see us in May. Yeah. So if they lose, number one, Steve Kerr might be like, see, I keep telling y'all, right? And that would be a win too. So either way it go, I don't think it matters.
How about, I mean, animosity-wise, here's what I'm asking. And I love this quote from your book. So in the book, you give the following or attribute the following quote to Clay. Quote, and he's talking about Kyrie Irving. I dislike him. But I respect him. I haven't forgot what he did for us. I haven't forgot what he did to us. And then you follow that up in the book to point out that Thompson was joking, of course. But is there animosity between these two teams from what you can tell? I mean, just from a personal level, do these guys want to beat each other on Christmas?
No question. But I think it's, for lack of a better word, it's contrived, right? So they almost have to because the fan bases have to. But if it was legitimate, like, it would transfer over to when they aren't playing. Like, you know, that's the old Biggie line, right? What's beef, right? Beef is when your moms ain't safe up in the streets.
Right.
So they were on Team USA together and all buddy-buddy. So it's like, it's not really animosity. It's not real animosity. It's not, like, I would say Draymond and Blake Griffin, their animosity is probably, like, real. You know, they not them dudes ain't hanging out together, right? They're not kicking it. But Kyrie and Klay, they came up together. You know, they played against – they've been playing against each other for years. James Harden, all them, they all are in the same circle. I don't think it's real animosity. I think they want to beat Cleveland. NBA players are great, and all pro players are great at compartmentalizing. For this game, we are going to have beef. And then after the game, we cool. Like, we know that was just on the court. So I don't think it's real animosity. But I do think they know, hey, our fans hate Cleveland, and Cleveland hates us. So we need to kind of represent
sure.
that,
right.
you know. We need to roll with that.
How about Draymond and LeBron? Because they didn't play with each other during the Olympics. And the last time we saw these guys make contact, I won't make some kind of testicle joke, but it wasn't a good scenario. Is there any hatred there, or is that also contrived?
That's the one that might be legitimate. I don't know. Because, first off, LeBron, I'm not sure you really ever know where he stands.
Yeah, right.
Because he's a master at saying what he needs to say and behaving how he needs to behave. But I know they had a friendship before that. You know, they have some kind of partnership with Uninterrupted. You know, I know
right.
Draymond's involved in that somehow. So they have a relationship, and we haven't seen that manifest since the finals. And I think some of that is because LeBron really started to despise the Warriors. And, you know, and it started coming out in that way. Also, and Draymond, the type of dude, would be like, well, man, look, if you want to act that way, look, we, you know, we can handle this like gangsters, if, you know, if you want to. I don't know about that, but I know there was a relationship. I'm not saying it's not there. We just haven't seen it bubble to the surface. Like, even when they lost, when the Warriors beat the Cavs in the playoffs, that relationship was obvious afterwards.
Right.
But now you haven't seen any of that stuff.
Which I like. I mean, in my mind, just as a fan, because I have decided to hate Cleveland and all their fans totally baselessly, I like the idea of these two teams disliking each other. So I'll just focus on Draymond maybe disliking LeBron. That's enough for me. It doesn't have to actually be real.
I think LeBron and Steph is real. I think LeBron and Steph is, you know, I don't think their animosity is real. I don't think they have animosity, but I think the way LeBron comes at Steph makes Steph say, all right, I'm coming for you.
Sure.
And there won't be that. It definitely ain't Magic Isaiah to bring up the Pistons right again. You know, they won't be kissing at half court before the game. And I think Steph has a really high respect level for LeBron. And wouldn't mind. I don't think he would mind if they had that type of relationship. But LeBron had, you know, LeBron does certain things to make you say, all right, that's how you want to play it. Let's play it. So I think they're a little, I don't know, it's not animosity between them, but they both look at the other as a threat. And I think they're going to go at each other that way.
Makes sense. I mean, straightforward competition, right? Let me follow up on a Draymond Green. So in the book, you touch about the idea how this is going to be the most hated team in history. One of the allusions you drew is going to be like Darth Vader if he kicked a puppy, which I enjoyed. But the thing that stuck out to me is you say this, quote, Green, obviously speaking about Draymond, as we know, loves being the villain. This may not be as readily apparent, but Coach Steve Kerr loves it too. Explain that for me, man. And so Does he relish this?
Man, Steve Kerr is like the ultimate nice guy, but man, people don't even know. That dude is a savage. Steve Kerr, he is as fiery and as competitive as you could imagine. Like you know, he got punched in the eye by Michael Jordan, and it comes off as like a bullying type thing. Like, man, Mike, why would you hit, you know, little old Steve Kerr, right? But like, after, like, knowing Steve Kerr, be like, man, he sure enough deserved that, right? Like, he earned that. I bet you he said something. Like, Steve is, like, grit your teeth, foam at the mouth competitive, right? So I think he likes it. I think he's like, yeah, let's go. Like, this is what y'all wanted. All right, let's go. I'm ready. I'm taking little sneak shots. I'm doing that. You know, I think he's got that. But he's also such a nice guy that it's hard to see him that way. And he looks really slight, you know, he doesn't seem to have it, but man, he's up there with any of them as far. And look, he keeps his starters in up 30. So,
yep. And you know,
you know what's up.
And we see little flashes of that, right? Like you see it when, I don't know, a ref does something he doesn't agree with and he legitimately has to be held back by Mike Brown because he really wants to like storm the court. Or even last night, Warriors are up by 30. Kevin Durant is, you know, still in the game for God knows what reason, throws in an inbound pass. It's stolen because he's being lazy, and Kerr calls a timeout immediately.
And was livid,
and
right?
Just like, in his ass. They're up by 30. I loved it, honestly. It was my favorite part of the game, man. Let me give you one more quote from the book because I know I don't want to take up too much of your time here. This one was credited to Klay Thompson as well. Quote, why would I be mad at my teammate's success? First off, I can't do what Steph can do. Plus, I wouldn't be where I am without Steph, without Draymond, without my teammates. It's all about the team. Their success is my success. Is he really this secure and humble? Is that really who Klay is?
Absolutely. You know what? And here's the crazy part, that I don't know if it's as much humility as it is indifference, right? I think there's a part of Klay who's learning how, you know, to kind of like, you know, take hold of what's his in this world.
Sure.
You know, I think he's getting that. But I really think a large portion of Klay couldn't care less about accolades, and he just doesn't care. It doesn't drive him. He's not. I mean, look, he signed a deal, a shoe deal with Anta.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's clear. That's, like, he's like, man, I don't care. You know what? I mean, he could have had a Nike deal or Adidas. You know, he signed with Anta. Like, hey, where the money at? You know, he doesn't care about he doesn't care as much about the perception of him or how he's received. Like, it's just weird. Even when you talk to him, you get the sense that, you know, he'll say something. You're like, Clay, are you sure you want to say that? Man, I don't care. Right? You know, he's just like that. I think he genuinely appreciates, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff and doesn't care about, like, accolades. Like, he's got his own personal drive, his own, you know, inward bent. And, like, he has to be coached to say, hey, Clay, you need to be a star. You know, you need to be out there. You need to, this is good for your brand and your business. You know, he's got to be coaxed into that stuff, because if it's up to him, he'd play with Rocco and hang in the gym and the club all day.
I mean, you'd see let me put that a different way. When Kevin Durant first joined the team, I said if basketball scientists created a body to score in the NBA, they would create Kevin Durant. I will say about Clay, if basketball scientists got together and created the perfect mentality for a shooting guard, it would be Clay's. Because he doesn't care if he misses. He doesn't care if he gets credit. He's always game to take whatever the hell shot you need him to take. I mean, what a huge advantage for him.
It's like he'd be a great cornerback, right?
Yeah, right. Get like, torched and not care. Yeah.
Whatever. I got you on the next one. It was almost his demise, too, when you think about it. Like, Clay was one of those guys who, you know, he could miss six straight, take the same shot. It's like, dude, can you get to the line? Like, can you drive? You know, and his kind of not absorbing all of the angles made you think he wasn't that smart of a player. Like, that's how his perception was. Like, he's hot and cold. He's kind of a space cadet. But really, what it is, it's an attribute, right? It is a benefit, because he's going to grow as a player, but at the same time, he just, like, he's unabashed. This dude don't care. He gonna take shots. He's gonna play his game. And you bring on Kevin Durant, he's like, yeah, I'm playing my same game.
I'm still getting my shots.
Right? And he was telling the truth. And it works, because he's not out here trying to steal spotlight either, and they know that.
Yeah.
Right? They know he's not. It's not from a perspective of, I don't want you to shine. It's like, I'm going to get yours. I'm going to help you get yours. And we all going to shine together. So his kind of humility, or, you know, his lack of concern over those matters allows him to just be Clay and go do what he's going to do.
Sure.
Everybody knows it's from a genuine place, and it's not from a place that's of selfish or malice.
I've been fired up to have you back on the show for multiple reasons. One of which is that we've now come up with this new segment called Storytime. In this instance, it would be Storytime with Uncle Marcus. I'm going to give you a player. You give me a story, man. This one, it's not in particularly creative of me to ask you about this player, but I know you've got a great relationship with him. Steph Curry.
Man, can I get like a category with that, Alex?
You tell me. This is best Steph
like
Curry
Double
stories.
Jeopardy?
Yes, best Steph Curry stories. Go, it's on you.
Man, I don't even know. There's so many stories. All right, let me see a story. All right, you gotta just give me the freedom to give you a couple. You know, just because they just come. You know. One story is from, I think it might have been his rookie year, and I always thought this was cool because before I covered We Believe, and you got Baron and Steven Jackson and Monta Ellis in the same locker room. So, you know, the relationships with players that had their moments, right? But so there was one movie called The Book of Eli.
Sure.
And
Denzel Washington.
Yeah, Denzel Washington, and it's a movie about, like, kind of loosely about, like, the Bible, which, you know, Steph is a devout Christian, and so we were talking about it, and we had a disagreement about the movie. You know, Steph was saying that he was blind, and I was saying he wasn't, and we were going back and forth. I mean, like, literally in a locker room debate. This is what I was talking about, like, back in the day, you could talk about anything. So before the game, we debating about you know, if he was blind or not. He's going over his points why he was blind, and I'm like, man, he walked over to the doorknob, straight opened the door, and let her out. How you do that if you blind, right? So we having this debate, and so then I think it was a Kings game. Steph comes into the game, and I'm sitting courtside. It wasn't a Kings game because it was like right there up close. I forgot where we were, but he hits a three, and he turns to me and he waves his hand in front of his face, right, like for his face. He does it. Then not something else happened. He does it again, and I'm like, so after the game, I'm like, well, what is that? I didn't get it. He's like, I'm telling you, he was blind. I'm telling you. So for like a week after that, every so often in the game, he would do something and look at me and wave his hand in front of his face, and I'm like, no, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. Right.
I mean, that shows
in the middle of a game.
It shows two things. One, that he's remarkably competitive. Two, that he was right, Marcus. I've seen that movie. That's the big reveal. That's the reveal of the book.
Here's the conclusion we settled on.
That he was blind?
If he was blind, it was terrible setup. Because there were so many scenes where he was not blind. And then all of a sudden at the end, he's blind.
Isn't he carrying around a Bible? And in the end, we find out it's in Braille. I mean, I think there was like, there's a big reveal scene, man.
The Bible. Yeah. The Bible was in Braille.
So there, what are you talking about? He was definitely blind. But I'm obviously
barely. Who created Braille? Was it a blind person or a seeing person?
Well, he didn't create the book. He was,
but my point is somebody who can see with no Braille, like knowing Braille doesn't make you blind.
Congratulations to you. I feel like the next year you're going to tell me that like the shark in Jaws wasn't a shark or something. I mean, it's amazing that you've been able to find this.
If we went over this, I'm telling you, I got like 10 scenes where you'd be like, yeah,
all right, look, drinks on me, and we will get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, invite Steph too.
Exactly.
I can concede that the intent was that he was blind. It's just, man, the execution was wanting.
There you go. Great story, by the way. And last question for you. So for those, I'm sure everybody already knows this, but for those who don't know, Marcus has a great Warriors podcast out there. It's called The Warriors Plus Minus, what he does with Tim Kawakami. Here's why I'm bringing it up. Scott, help me if I'm wrong. By my count, we've now had Marcus on three times. We talked about his book, had a great time. I don't think the words Warriors Huddle have ever been uttered on Warriors Plus Minus. I mean, what's going on with that? Marcus, we can't get anything? I mean, some love? Anything there?
You know, I'm contractually obligated. You know,
nicely handled.
Here's the real question: have you heard any other podcast mentioned?
I am way too self-centered to worry about that. Exactly. Man, what are you talking about? I'm just worried about me.
So here's what we're gonna do. But hey, look, I can guarantee you, I've mentioned the word Warriors and Huddle on the podcast. I guarantee you that.
I'll use my editing skills to splice those together at some point.
There you go. This seems like the Book of Eli. But the follow through is
terrible. Is this your way of saying shout you out on Warriors Plus?
That's it. That's me begging. That's basically me begging for that.
That's easy. I can shout it out.
I'll take it. We appreciate you taking.
Wait a second. I got another courage story.
Oh, let's go.
It's kind of bad. It involves Steph, but it really wasn't about Steph per se. We were in New York. You guys know how players, if you say something, and you know, homophobia is pretty rampant in the NBA.
Sure. Yeah.
If you say something that's borderline or suspect, they go insane, right?
Yep.
They go, you know, so, interviewing Steph, I'm talking with Steph on the court at Madison Square Garden, and like we're just talking, and he's got a towel around his neck, and I don't remember what we're talking about, but something happened, and he like tries to hit me with the towel, and I was like, chill, like, you know, I was like, hey man, that stuff, like, that hurts. I know we used to do that when we were in high school, right? And, you know, you'd wet the tip a little bit and then snap it, and they went crazy. And I didn't know what was happening. Steph goes losing his mind. They go crazy. They're like, oh, Marcus, oh, I can't believe you. And I'm like, what? So then they run out and tell Steven Jackson. And Steven Jackson comes up to me. He's like, I need to hear the story from the beginning. Start from the beginning. And tell me. I'm like, what? And then I said, So yeah, we used to wet the tip, and he like loses his mind again, and I don't know what happened. And then Steph explains to me how my comment was suspect, and I was like, I don't even understand that. Like, but yeah, Steph set me up on that one.
Yeah, fair enough. Also, I love that it harkens back to a time when Steph and Steven Jackson interacted. You know, like you forget that there was that weirdo crossover between eras. But yeah, no wet the tip stories here, man.
Try to
keep that on the up and up. Where can we find the book? Where can we find more of you? For people out there listening who need a little bit of more MT2 in their life, where should they turn?
Well, you know, I think the book is available at everywhere books are sold, at Amazon.com and et cetera. But you can always go to our website, mercurynews.com or eastbaytimes.com, and get the book. It's a good place to read some pieces from us. But, you know, you can always find me at Thompson Scribe.
Boom.
Just about everywhere you look, Twitter, yep. Snapchat, Facebook, well, you pick it, whatever, Instagram, at Thompson Scribe, you're going to find me. So I appreciate all the support you guys give.
Marcus, you are the leading voice of the Golden State Warriors. After this, man, I can confirm the San Jose Mercs take. You know, it's good stuff.
I don't know about that, man. I told you, I got to call somebody.
Thank you, man. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and I'm going to make that shout out for you.
We appreciate it. Huge fun, you guys. True every single time we do this. Really true with Marcus. I really enjoyed him today.
Yeah, I mean, he always has, I mean, so much Warrior knowledge and just great takes, like great analogies, examples, stories, obviously.
I hope to God that at some point in my life, someone will come to me and like, look, I want a Steph Curry story. And I'm like, oh God, I have so many of them. I don't know which way to go. Like, as of right now, I have zero. So I was really impressed. Everybody out there, please remember you want to reach out to us. You can hit us up at warriorshuddle@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is @warriorshuddle. Here's why that's important this time. Marcus has been nice enough to give us a few extra copies of his book, Super Team, to give out to fans. So follow us on Twitter. We're going to have a couple contests up there and then give out the book. So again, if you have any interest, we're at Warriors Huddle. Our website remains warriorsworld.net. We're also on vSporto and a bunch of other podcasting services, including iTunes. That's pretty much what we got this week. Happy holidays to everybody. Enjoy your family. We're most likely going to take next week off and then be back with a bunch of great guests. So hopefully we'll hear you guys real soon. Until then, go Warriors, and hopefully we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Good.